What's up, Podcast Land? Ponkin here with a cheeky, I'm going to say 90-second self-plug. If you follow us on Facebook, then you may have heard of this already. You know Nerdist, right? Probably. Yeah, you've heard of them. Well, Nerdist teamed up with Inkshares for a sci-fi fantasy novel competition. And I jumped on that the moment I found out, and I submitted a novel that I wrote a while back called Champions of the Zigzag. It's a wacky, paranormal road trip slash detective story, and it's got vampires and a Viking and the reincarnation of Casanova, and it's got God and Satan and the Easter Bunny, just to name a few characters. I don't profess to be as great as the greats, but I think and hope that if you like Terry Pratchett or Douglas Adams, you may very well like this one as well. So please show your support to me! And by extension to Who Back When, by pre-ordering a copy of your own, go to whobackwhen.com/book. That's whobackwhen.com/book. That'll take you to a page where you can read more about Champions of the Zigzag, you can even read a sample chapter of it, and you can order a copy of your own. Only the top five actually count in this contest, so if my book doesn't make it to the finals, you will not be charged at all. If I do make it to the finals, then you'll only be charged for a copy, $9.99. But check this out. One copy costs $9.99, but if you share the book on Twitter from that page, Inkshares will actually give you $10 in credit, and that's a whole book for free! Holy crap, okay. Go to whobackwhen.com/book, pre-order my novel, Champions of the Zigzag, and then tweet your friends and tell them to tweet it, and all of a sudden you've turned this contest into a pyramid scheme, except this one actually works, and you'll get to read what's in my brain. Anyway, I would super duper appreciate it, and what could I say? You guys, I'm pouring my heart out here. One more thing, completely unrelated, before we jump into this episode, I just want to say super duper thank you to Drew Back When, the Druid, the Druidhammer, the Druidmeister, the Druid, who edited this episode of Who Back When. He edited the shit out of it, and he did a fantastic job, so tell him what a great job he did on Twitter, at Drew Back When. Okay, that's enough schmaltz for now. Hope you enjoyed this episode. I know you will, it's a good one. Ciao, ciao. whobackwhen.com/book.
Who Back When?
Shall we start this up?
Yes.
Holy shit balls.
Okay.
Who's starting it? Do you want to start it?
Welcome, everyone. I am Drew of many nicknames.
Yeah, the Druidmeister.
Yes, that's just the latest in a long line. Welcome to a bonus Who Back When episode on the nascent Capaldi era.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we're going to go through his first series. Yes. Is that Series 8? I think it's Series 8.
Yes, although the TARDIS Wikipedia whatever you were just showing me says the Christmas Special is part of Series 9, so we've already had like 9 months of that.
Yeah, holy crap.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Hang on, dude, excuse me.
Everyone, you may not know, but this is Ponkin.
Oh my god, hi! How you doing, man?
I'm fine, thanks.
Are we going to address the elephant in the room? I'm sorry for calling you an elephant, Pete.
Well, you pretty much have addressed him already. You better bring him in.
We have a special guest. He may be popping in and out of this episode. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're sitting down. If you're not sitting down, just sit down right now because you're about to fall down if you're not. With us in the Who Back When studio today is Peter Capaldi. Peter Capaldi, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm super honoured. Are you honoured, Druid?
Oh, well, I mean, this is my first bonus episode, and we've got the current Doctor Who in the room.
That's pretty amazing.
Doesn't get more high stakes than this.
Have you ever listened to the show before, Pete?
I can't say I have. This is just a promotional thing, if I'm honest. But hello, everybody.
Well, thank you very much for... Yeah, you know what? Yeah, sure. No, carry on playing with your mobile phone. Anyway, so today we're going to go through Series 8. We're going to talk about a few things pertaining to Capaldi. This is just a bonus episode. It's, you know what it is? It's filler.
Yeah, filling your ears with gold. Which was an important part of Series 8.
It was indeed.
We are shooting golden arrows into your earballs.
Oh, so, okay, suggestion. How about we do it this way? We go through them episode by episode.
Right.
And on top of that, at some point, either we finagle this into the episode by episode, or after we've done the episode by episode thing, we talk about Missy, we talk about Capaldi in general. Maybe we can conclude on that.
And what was the other one?
Yeah, Capaldi. Yeah, sorry. Sorry, Pete. You don't mind if I call you Pete, right?
Not too much. Not enough to leave the room.
really awesome. Okay, there was another thing we were going to talk about. What was that?
I'm sure it'll come back. We have at least 2.5 minutes of solid content here.
Absolutely. So, shall we jump into the very first episode of Series 8, Deep Breath?
Yes, let's take one for the team.
So, Deep Breath, we're introduced to Capaldi. I suppose, okay, we had already seen him in that little tiny little segment.
We'd seen a tiny little segment of his face.
Yes, we had.
No, 13! And then he just sort of glared camera woodsly.
Yes, exactly. We had those eyes. And we had the eyes in the 50th anniversary.
Oh, we did.
Yeah, when every doctor was visible and we only got Capaldi's
eyes. Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Oh, sorry.
That's exactly what I was describing.
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant the end when actually he's been regenerated.
Oh, no, I'd forgotten about that part. You know, the important part.
Okay, well, regardless, we're now in Deep Breath. What was your impression of him, like his first stint as the Doctor? What was your first... And Peter, shut up, Peter, for a second. I want to hear what the Druid is saying.
Well, I like how they address the eyebrows thing face on. Ha 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 ha.
Nice one.
Did you like that little expression I just coined there?
It may also be the very first time that he... Because he recognises himself. And I think most people on the internet were saying that he was recognising himself as another character whom the Doctor had encountered on his adventures, right? There's the Tennant episode. It is a Tennant episode, isn't it? The one where he goes to Pompeii. The fires of Pompeii, right? And Capaldi was in there. And at some point in...
As a mild-mannered extra.
Yeah, exactly. And at some point in Deep Breath, he looks himself in the mirror, he recognises his face, and he goes, like, why did I choose that face? And there was that, I think possibly the first time in Doctor Who, that we get that, oh shit, I've actually regenerated as a, you know, a dude who's appeared as an actor on the show before.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a parallel with Tom Baker just appearing at the end of the 50th.
Also true.
You know, as a much older, and therefore you have to sort of come up with an ingenious way that happened in the Doctor Who universe, like some deep, distant future regeneration where he's harking back to his then-distant past, but people did it.
Yeah, I can't remember who said this. I think this may have been Gina on the 50th anniversary bonus episode that we did. Regardless, I have heard this theory. This is not my theory. I can't take credit for it. But that when doctors regenerate, they don't cease to be. That personality goes and sort of retires somewhere, and very possibly Tom Baker's regeneration, when he disappeared off the show, he went and became a caretaker in a museum, like in the V&A or wherever he is.
Well, as we shall see, the Doctor loves being a caretaker.
Yes, he does. Yeah, we're getting to that. Okay, so in Deep Breath, we have the Clockwork Dude, we have the introduction of Heaven or Paradise or whatever, which we're sort of, the Series 8 is building up towards.
Yes, the Mechanical Man.
The Mechanical Man.
Goes
fantastic
there.
Special effects, by the way. I love that bit when you can see the interior of his skull, of his cranium, just sort of clockworking away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we've had Clockwork automatons on the show before, and they were like a pile of rotten cabbage next to this dude. He is just the apex of mechanical dudes.
Well, I mean, we're reviewing Series 2 at the moment.
Yeah.
And
we just had some mechanical dudes.
Yeah, and the advance, I mean, back in 2007 or 2006, whenever it was, we thought we were pretty advanced then. We thought there weren't many more advances to come, but goodness.
Yeah, now someone's basically green screening the inside of their cranium.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. So special effects wise, awesome. We get a dinosaur. Did you like that? You a fan of the dinosaur?
Sort of revealed the narrative limitations of a dinosaur, really. It's a great big thing. It lumbers around. Okay, it's got an interesting backdrop. I've never seen a dinosaur in front of the Houses of Parliament before.
Does it blow up or something? It dies, definitely. It definitely dies.
Doesn't it die in a raging inferno?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, suddenly it just catches fire, doesn't it? Okay, well, blah, 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 blah. It's going to be my new catchphrase. Fuck, I've got to stop saying that.
But the Doctor, you know, in getting to see the dinosaur, manages to convey and relate his love of all living things.
Yeah.
Because most of that first episode, Capaldi is keen to establish himself as an edgy, slightly standoffish, perhaps dickhead. Watch out. Sorry, Peter. And, you know, an interesting character, perhaps prickly. And then at the end, he seems to show more love for the dinosaur than any of the people, really.
Yeah, true. But doesn't he also... I mean, he does defend mankind. Towards the end of the episode, he's already sort of come into his own.
Yeah.
The whole episode is just him sort of waking up with a hangover. Right? Like, he's regenerated, there's still a little bit of booze and heroin in the back of his throat, and I've been bringing up heroin this evening a lot, by the way, I apologise for that. But, yeah, he wakes up
that's what happens when you watch an E17 video.
Definitely cutting that.
Yeah, he wakes up with a bit of a hangover, and then, like, we spend the entire episode with him kind of slowly but surely regaining balance and figuring out his place in the universe and remembering who he is and whatever. And towards the end of the episode, he's remembered not only who he is, but also how badass he used to be, mm-hmm. like, sort of harkening back to William Hartnell, in the first Doctor, and also, as in, what a grumpy old sod.
Yeah.
But also his love of mankind, because he basically NLPs the mechanical dude to kill himself in order to save people, right?
One way or another, that mechanical guy jumps. Yeah. Whether the Doctor pushes him emotionally or physically, it hardly matters.
It doesn't matter. I would say that he's super sophisticated and just NLPs the shit out of him. Yeah. He NLPs him out of a goddamn window.
Yeah, so
is there not a balloon in this one as well?
I thought the guy fell from the balloon.
Is that what it is?
At the end, yeah, I think so. Because I think the balloon is released from the building somehow as his getaway vehicle.
How far can he get with a balloon?
Well, as far as the wind takes him.
Ugh.
Winds blow all over the earth. Obviously, but he'll never get to heaven in an old balloon.
No, that's true.
An old balloon comes down too soon.
Is that a lyric from something?
It's an old scouting song. You'll never get to heaven in a biscuit tin because a biscuit tin's got biscuits in. And you'll never get to heaven in Arcala's car because Arcala's car don't go that far.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel like I missed out not having been a scout.
I have now communicated to you all the joys you missed out on. That and burnt marshmallows. As in, you
I
know...
marshmallows.
As in charred black. But anyway, that first episode was sort of notable for... I remember the reaction to it almost more than anything. From the episode where they've been building up Capaldi as the new Doctor,
yeah.
And suddenly, because he wasn't super cuddly wuddly,
yeah.
like Tennant or Smith, not as friendly wendly, suddenly everybody was comparing him to Colin Baker, who
was an arsehole.
Yes, the great precedent arsehole Doctor. And suddenly everyone was convinced that Capaldi was just him back and grumpier
than
ever.
Yeah, but the Doctor is also part arsehole. I'm assuming that Gallifreyans have anuses, but, like, he is part arsehole. Going back to... I have very limited experience of the classic Doctors, but William Hartnell, we very recently finished the original... William Hartnell was a total douchebag. I mean, he was sort of this... I think he's been called on the show before, in fact, sort of a Mr. Magoo arsehole transporter accident. Because he's bumbly and almost senile, but he's also such a dick. Like, he left his granddaughter in post-apocalyptic London. He just willy-nilly kills people. He throws a dude out of a window. He laughs at Rome burning. Like, he is a shitbag. And I love him for it. And when Capaldi was introduced as the Doctor, not in this episode, but on whatever it was, when the BBC did that big spiel of, like, we're going to announce who the next Doctor is.
Oh, yeah, with, like, the half-hour primetime
show. Yeah, exactly.
Show.
Yeah, and like,
with Zoe Ball.
Simon Pegg was on there, I think. Like,
was he?
Yeah, like, whatever. When they did that thing, and when Peter Capaldi came out, he was doing the same pose. He struck the same pose as William Hartnell, like, holding his lapels.
Old number one.
Exactly. So clearly, he is the same dick. I love that. That's fine. Colin Baker wasn't the first dick Doctor. Dick Doctor.
Oh, good to know.
However, okay, so hang on. What was your point with that? I feel like I very rudely interrupted you with that. So people reacted to him.
People criticise Doctor Who for being too safe. They criticise it for being risky. Hell, all I do in my reviews is criticise it. But
same here.
This whole series, the Doctor kept a lot of cards close to his chest. His character developed very slowly in a way. He revealed more and more as time went on, and you never were quite sure. Maybe he just couldn't be as easily pigeonholed as the previous few. You know, from the first episode, you sort of knew exactly where they would go with things.
Yeah.
Or a lot more things.
Well,
anyway.
Okay, take Tennant's first episode.
Yeah.
The Christmas invasion. He spends most of it in bed. Like, he's just asleep for the entire episode, and then towards the end, he wakes up, is a little bit wibbly wobbly, and then he goes full on badass. Like, he just straight up, his hand gets chopped off, and then he grows another one, and he just straight up murders a dude, the rock hard alien.
Yeah.
Throws him off the spaceship, and just walks off. He's like, yeah, that's the kind of dude I am. Fuck you, Tennant. That's not the kind of dude you ended up being. You ended up being, like, this super nice, chill guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
But that's also, that's a first episode where you don't get to know him at all.
Well, okay, maybe after the end of this first series, do you feel like you know
Capaldi
as a Doctor?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Maybe we should just jump back and forth in time here a little bit. I freaking love
Capaldi. If it's good enough for the Doctor, it's good enough for us.
Yeah. By the way, you've been very quiet here, Pete. Are you okay there?
Sorry, I was just wondering when I could leave. Don't get me wrong, I like you guys and all, but I feel like I want to retain some of the mystery.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Wait. I've had enough. Let's get a few things straight. This is future Capaldi here, fucking incensed, because by this point in the recording, I'd actually fallen asleep. And so one of these cretins took it upon themselves to make it sound like I was still awake. But instead of capturing some of the majesty of the 12th Doctor, they decided to go with a sort of weird stoned Andy Murray vibe. I'm hearing this for the first time, and I'm as shocked as you. Seriously though, I should also say by way of legal disclaimer that in no way should it be taken that Peter Capaldi was present at this recording and contributed any of this fucking shite.
Okay, I don't want to interrupt you because you're clearly saying some really interesting things, but I'm going to interrupt you. I'm going to ask the Druid.
Yeah, hello.
There's one more thing that was revealed in the first episode, and I think we kind of need to speed up a little bit if we're going to get through all 12 of them plus the Christmas bonus.
Yes.
But one more thing was revealed. This is the first time that we hear of Paradise and Heaven.
Yes,
right? Because
yes.
The Clockwork Dude, he dies, and then I think we actually meet Missy at the end of it.
Yes. She's like the welcoming party.
Yeah, exactly. They're in a garden or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, what was your thought after that first episode? What was your thought when suddenly you're seeing Paradise?
Well, I mean, obviously I was intrigued, and you know it's not going to be Heaven in a religious traditional way.
Sure.
You know it's going to be a Doctor Who spin on it or inversion of it.
There's going to be a sci-fi take on it in some way.
Yeah. And, you know, I was completely fine with that, given that in Series 2, obviously, we've met the devil
himself. That's true, yeah.
So
we've met the devil.
After this first episode, they really could have gone almost any way with it.
Yeah, very true.
And so that was one of the things that really did keep me watching episode after episode.
I was going to say, only a week or two ago, I re-listened to another New Who review that we did, that JD and I did, of Tooth and Claw, the werewolf one,
mm-hmm.
the one with Kung Fu monks. Such a shit episode. Anyway, whatever. You should listen to our review, though. It's one of my faves. Anyway, in that one, now I can't remember who said this. I think JD says this, that there are so many, like, mystical or religious or mythological, like, whatever. There are things that are not sci-fi based, that are sort of quote-unquote fantasy-based, non-science fiction. And I'm not trying to offend anyone who believes in either religion. Fucking, oh god, I'm just digging myself into a very, very deep hole here.
Yeah, but, listen up, everyone, because he's going to say something that will shit all over your most dearly felt visions of the future and hope for the fate of the universe.
My point was going to be, the point raised in that episode was that there is no room for that, it seems, in Doctor Who. Like, there wasn't even room for werewolves, for God's sake. They had to find a sci-fi explanation for it.
Right.
And the same thing applies to, let's call it more serious themes, like the afterlife, which to a lot of people is considered just fiction, to some people is considered absolute fact, but in the Whoniverse, in Doctor Who, it has to be science fiction. Like, mm-hmm. there isn't even room for it being something actually factual. I reckon that in the Doctor Who universe, there is no afterlife.
Yeah, right? Possibly.
Whereas, and if there is an afterlife, it has a scientific explanation. Like, it's immediately sci-fi.
Yeah. I mean, part of the Satan Pits arc, we had a mini review from Robert, I think, who drew attention to the fact that in that episode, the devil says a lot of interesting things about how before time he was put there by, I don't know, angels or some supernatural force.
Sure.
And Robert's point was that in this episode at least a lot of things were left unexplained, and he thought that was quite courageous of the writers to sort of do that within the context of Doctor Who. But certainly within this series,
I was going to say, Series 8, that is not unexplained. No, that is very much explained.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's speed ahead to that explanation.
Yes, let's speed into the Dalek.
Oh my god, into the Dalek. It's got an actor from Spaced. Fantastic. Thank you very much, Tyres, for still having, like, just time to act.
Between drug binges.
and delivering parcels. I loved Into the Dalek. I thought it was fantastic. It has a really good plot. It's a lovely homage to the Fantastic Voyage or Inner Space,
yes.
That's the one. And at this point, I feel like Capaldi's already himself, right? I think at some point in the beginning...
He certainly takes charge more naturally in this episode.
Yeah, and he's super cynical as well. Cynical and sarcastic. He's already the bastard I want him to be.
He doesn't trust anything.
Anything! and also, we get the first introduction of Capaldi hates the military.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think
Which is another season-long theme.
Yeah, exactly. Holy crap. Actually, that's something that we need to do in this bonus. We need to just list the themes and then splooge all over it and just call it a day.
What the fuck a buck of glory are you on about now?
Okay.
Fair enough. So what were the high points, low points of Into the Dalek?
I think the low point was Fiddle around behind this circuit board and the computer will sort of fix itself. I just seen Leon working some of his magic with the recording program tonight. Computers are incredibly complicated things. You don't just shove a fist in there and waggle it.
That's what you said. Okay, so that's the low point. What's the high point?
Well, the high point is seeing what they did with the interior of a Dalek.
Do you not think that's a bit fucking obvious?
Yeah.
Yes, it does have a sort of space-based feel to it after a while, yeah. Because there are chutes and there are dumps and...
Sure, but in the same way that if you watch The Fantastic Voyage or Inner Space and you're inside a human being, you know that it's a human being. Or if you watch that episode of Rick and Morty where they're inside a human being, it's hilarious. Anyway, like, it's basically like you go to Disneyland, but it's all slimy. I mean, that's it, right?
Right, yeah.
It has the architecture of something man-made, and the same applies to the interior of a Dalek. Mm. I thought it was really cool. You have sort of the quote-unquote antibodies that fly around and zap anything alien.
Yeah.
I like that. How did you feel about the architecture of the Dalek? Inside, we now have absolute definitive proof. There is shit tons of empty space inside a Dalek. They could have built the Dalek casing to be so much smaller and, like, compact.
Yep, they could have fitted more weaponry in there.
Yeah, exactly. In the second ever Who Back When review, the Daleks, Flapjack, aka the Jackhammer, he said that there is so much space in there, there is space enough for a huge lithium-ion battery. Mm-hmm. And at the time, they were running on static electricity. Like, there's just empty space. Just make it fucking run on earth or dirt. You don't have to, whatever, be confined to metal. Doesn't matter.
Flapjack, you are vindicated.
Well done, Flappy. Okay, here's another really, really positive thing about Into the Dalek. There's that retrospective of all prior encounters with Daleks. Mm-hmm. Like, when he shows the Dalek inside... Whom he is, inside which he is, inside... I want to say whom. I want to personify this thing.
Well, so does the episode, doesn't it? It really plays on that boundary.
Okay, so when he is inside of the Dalek, he shows the Dalek... so hard right now. He shows the Dalek all these images of his own memories of having encountered the Daleks before. And we get to see Daleks from prior Doctors. Mm. That's awesome. That does not happen a lot, right?
The only parallel I can think of off the top of my head is the the Christmas episode with the new companion guy who thinks he's a doctor.
Future Capaldi again. He means the fucking next doctor. Wait, the next fucking doctor. Oh, fuckety bye.
And
the guy from the Walking Dead.
He's got the doctor's wristwatch on or something. Or the master's watch or something.
Something.
MacGuffin. And suddenly you sort of whiz through all the previous doctors in a sequence near the end, I think.
Interesting.
I
don't remember that. I'm looking forward to rewatching that, though, because I just fell in love with that guy's performances while I was falling in love with The Walking Dead. Because that guy is in The Walking Dead. Have you watched The Walking Dead?
I have not.
Oh, dude, watch it. Treat yourself.
Okay.
I was going to say another thing. Isn't it in Deep Breath? Didn't we skip that? That at the end of the episode, she gets a phone call from Matt Smith?
Oh, yes.
It is in Deep Breath, isn't it? Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, we've only watched these episodes once, like when they aired.
Yes, it's right. He was away from Doctor Who for all of 45 minutes.
Yeah, and like just in case the fangirls who are super duper in love and have like the biggest crushes ever on Matt Smith, in case they feel like, oh, this guy is too mature for us to have a crush on, like, we're going to abandon the show. Let's throw in Matt Smith in a throwaway scene that is so cheesy. I'm sorry, it is so cheesy.
Well, one man's cheesy is another man's deliciously heartwarming. I'm not going to say that I'm that other man, but I'm sure there are people of that opinion out there.
Yeah, sure. No, okay, fine. I do agree with that. I understand that. But
I loved it. I hated it.
Anyway, so...
I hated it too.
Thank you so much for your candor, Pete. Okay, so Into the Dalek, thumbs up, thumbs down. Actually, we should do that.
I'll put a thumb up the Dalek.
Put a thumb up to the Dalek. Let's retroactively thumb up, thumb down for Deep Breath.
Less so, actually.
Less so. Yeah. Are you sort of wobbling in the middle?
Yeah, I got a wobbly thumb for that one.
Okay, wobbly thumb from you, thumb up from me. That's as detailed a rating as we're going to give these episodes this time around.
Yes.
Next episode, Robot of Sherwood.
The first Mark Gatiss episode. episode of this series, and therefore...
It shows.
Yes?
I think it shows.
Do tell.
Did we not talk about this? The whole climax of the show, if you will, is massively Gatiss-esque. I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily. I like this episode, and actually, before we press record, I think you agreed, or possibly I agreed with you. I think actually you...
We were of one mind.
We were of one mind. No one needs first credit for this. Whatever. It's a great episode, with the exception of the goddamn golden arrow. Why is that golden arrow scene in there?
To just catch up with a ship moving through the air in the shape of an arrow. There's no arrow-shaped slot for that to fall into. It just needs gold somewhere.
It just touches it, and then, oh, really, it had an effect now. Utter nonsense.
I mean, if they can build something that receptive to gold, can they not build something that works with another element?
Yeah, I suppose. You're in Sherwood. Make it receptive to moss.
Yeah. So my thumb was up all the way through that episode, and then suddenly it plummeted.
Okay, so Sherwood gets a thumbs down from you.
Oh, overall, I need two thumbs, really.
Oh, wow.
Two thumbs, and one is up and one is down.
Oh, hot. So many times have I wished that I had two thumbs per hand. It would make things so much easier. For me, Singular of Sherwood gets a wobbly thumb, because I feel like this is a hugely entertaining episode up until the climax. And I really enjoyed the whole. up until a certain point, fairly close to the end, I don't remember the episode in great detail, but I do remember that feeling of, oh, this is clearly not Robin Hood. Like, this is clearly, this is basically, I'm gonna file this under mummies, werewolves, yeah, like fictional characters who are clearly there with some sci-fi explanation. Like, this cannot be Robin Hood, he's on a holodeck or something, right? Or he's been suckered by a Zygon and now he's fantasizing about it. But then it turned out it was Robin Hood. I'm super chuffed about that. I thought it was hilarious, and I love all the fun, silly banter around, like, why are you so goddamn merry? Their merriness, merriment, really just fueled Capaldi's anger in a way that really, really just spoke to me. I liked it.
Actually, remembering those scenes where he's with Robin in the prison or the dungeon or whatever.
Yes.
And them going at each other, that was very entertaining.
Very entertaining, right? And then it comes to the end where it's like, okay, we're going to get the cheesy ending. But then it goes so cheesy, it just goes full Gorgonzola, and he golden arrows the episode into shit.
Yeah.
Such a bummer.
There should be a commonly used phrase coined out of that, like jumping the shark.
I was just going to say!
Golden arrowing.
Golden arrowing, absolutely. Yes, okay, new phrase, that's happening.
Again, we are of one mind.
I was about to say jump your truck. Okay, all right, fine. So, Robert of Sherwood, wobbly thumb, at least for me.
Yeah.
All right.
But I'm still excited to hear what the next episode might bring.
Oh, Listen. Yes. Peter, what did you think of Listen?
I can't really remember it. Slowly getting drunk in the corner here.
I think Future Punkin may need to pop into the episode at some point and just go, by the way, Peter Capaldi is not here, please don't sue us.
They can't prove it. They will hear it and think, his agent will go mental. It's like, Peter, what the fuck?
Why did you get on this podcast?
The series is about to begin and you're just pulling stunts like this.
That would be great. Okay, no. So Listen.
Yeah, we looked Listen up 10 minutes ago, and I've already forgotten everything about it.
This is the one where they go back in time. It's Doctor and Clara. They go back in time. They meet Danny Pink when he's a kid. This is, like, basically the backstory of Danny Pink being a bedwetter. And then it's all based on that, every person has at some point in their life had the nightmare of getting up out of bed and a hand reaches out and touches their leg or something.
Yeah.
Really? Have you ever had that dream?
Not that specific. I think it was perhaps a mistake to make it that specific. But maybe everyone on the Doctor Who writing team has had that dream, and they were cosmically brought together for reasons beyond our ken.
Okay, so yes, they go back. He's in. Is that an orphanage? Or is it a school? Yeah. Is it a school or an orphanage? I can't remember.
Oh, I don't know. There must be a reason why Danny Pink is the way he is. He is another season long theme.
We could talk
about. Although I sense.
That was the thing that we forgot, or that I forgot. Okay. Clara and Pink. That was the relationship. That was the third thing on the list. Okay, so anyway, basically everyone's had this nightmare at some point, and also there are weird creatures, possibly interdimensional creatures, whom we can't see, we can't hear. Possibly we can hear them, actually. I mean, it's called Listen. We can't see them anyway, and they are there. And this is also the episode that marks the introduction of the blackboard, because the Doctor starts writing on blackboards, right?
Yeah.
And possibly the aliens are also writing on the blackboards, like they're replying to him on the blackboard.
Yes.
Is it just me? Like, he says, what is happening is someone there, and he turns around and someone's written, listen, on the blackboard.
Yes, is that the beginning of the episode?
I think that is the beginning of the episode. Either way, blah, 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 blah. They're in this creepy old mansion. It's basically a ghost story. Mm-hmm. And there's that super creepy scene where something is under the duvet.
The duvet is suddenly tumescent.
Yes. Oh, hot words. Oh, how could I possibly speak into such a phallic microphone with such a pounding erection? All right, anyway, this episode also... I'm just going to cut that and type it. This episode also has... You reminded me of this. We get to see the Doctor as a kid.
Yes, with his parents expositing in a room within earshot, which is handy.
What are they saying?
About how they're going to send him off to, you know, military academy, and if he's ever going to grow up to be a soldier, then he has to stop, you know, pissing himself over these silly little dreams, much like Mr. Pink.
Yes, this is what you were saying. This is why you hate soldiers.
Mm.
Oh.
And then, of course, the crossover with that is Danny Pink treating the Doctor sarcastically as a general throughout the rest of the series.
Yeah.
And going, yes, sir! And generally being unpleasant.
Which totally blows, by the way. Mm. Massively blows.
Yeah. Well, I think because Pink and the Doctor hate each other,
yeah,
I think it's fair to say.
Do they? I mean, they sort of hate the...
Cut that.
I think to a certain degree they do hate each other, but is it that they hate each other as people or that they hate each other as archetypes? Like, the Doctor disapproves of Pink because he's a soldier, but he doesn't necessarily hate Pink as a person, as a human being, because later on, when Pink is cybered, he actually definitely respects the guy.
Yeah, I guess I'm conflating the Doctor's opinion with the public's opinion, and perhaps our opinion, of Pink.
Very true.
And how,
if you
set someone up against the Doctor, you're probably going to side with the Doctor.
Probably.
And so you have to make the character pretty damn likable if he's going to withstand that.
Yeah, he'd have to be like 10 times as charming as that Arnold on Green Acres. Like, isn't that... Sorry, it's... rewatch Pulp Fiction. Isn't that a fault on the part of the writing staff? I mean,
everything.
Okay, yeah, sorry.
No, I
don't want to be that guy, but, like, I mean, if they're creating a character, they're creating a recurring character, in fact, and they want to lend him some gravitas and some just respect and, charisma, why would they pit him against the person that the entire show is geared towards creating putting on a pedestal?
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
And I wanted to like Danny Pink because I instinctively root for the underdog, and Danny Pink being hated by everyone made him the underdog, and so I sought, you know, goodness in his character. And, you know, there are some scenes where he isn't a complete dick to Clara, and, you know, where actually their interactions...
Do you like him as an actor?
Oh, it's hard to say because I haven't seen him in anything else. He certainly played Danny Pink fairly consistently.
I thought he played Danny Pink well. I think Danny Pink is, he's well performed. He's just not well, and he's well cast.
Mm-hmm.
He's just not well conceived. Don't create someone who is opposed to the Doctor. Create someone who is... You know what? Okay, so the parallel that you have to draw, I think, is to the first Doctor's first companions.
Okay.
So they were Barbara and Ian, who were both teachers in the same school where Clara and Pink are teachers.
Right.
So Clara and Pink are clearly an homage to those two, right? But Babs and Ian, they were kidnapped by the Doctor. At first, both of them sort of resented the Doctor for this, but then over time, they grew to love this guy as a bumbly old Mr. Magoo.
Okay.
Awesome. Everything's great. And because they were on the same plane, it works. But with Clara and Pink, you have Clara, who's sort of secretly in love with the guy, but you don't really know, but maybe, and you know, probably, and she's probably touched herself and thinking about him.
Well, I mean, she's wrapped all around his timeline.
Nice. But she's also super keen for Pink to bone down. Pink, however, hates the Doctor, or, like, disapproves of him, so they're no longer on the same plane. One is pro-Doc, one is counter-Doc, or contra-Doc. Doesn't work out.
And another parallel that struck me is Rose and Danny, because Rose is all about the Doctor. And, okay, Clara is more about Pink than Rose is about Danny after about 5 minutes in.
Wait, hang on, Danny... Oh, no, you mean...
Is his name not Danny?
No, it's Danny Pink. The other one is Mickey. Mickey and Ricky.
Right, yes. Sorry, Danny Pink.
Meh.
Yes, okay.
I was going to do the voice.
Do you want me to re-record that whole bit?
No, don't worry about it.
Okay.
I'll cut it somehow.
Okay, yes. So there's another parallel to Rose and Mickey. Yes.
You are doing the bit again. Okay, go for it.
I am doing the bit again. There's a parallel to Rose and Mickey as well, where Rose is also patently in love with the Doctor.
Yes.
And, okay, Clara's more in love with Danny.
She's super duper in love with Danny.
Yeah,
than Rose is with Mickey. But she also clearly has a massive wide-on for the Doctor.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I wondered if you saw any parallels there, because Mickey is hardly the series' most popular side character.
I hate
either.
Mickey.
Well, exactly. And
That's a tough one. It's a really good question. It is a tough one, though.
I'm not even sure what question I asked. I was just asking, you know, do you think they sort of followed along the same lines, really?
Less so, because Rose and the Doctor actually ended up having their romance, whereas Clara and the Doctor, I mean, they may still, we don't know, very possibly, / probably, but at the moment at least, she, I mean, okay, here's the difference. Yeah. Rose left Mickey to go travelling with the Doctor, whereas Clara doesn't want to commit fully to travelling with the Doctor because she also has a life with Pink.
Right, but in the same sort of way that Mickey wouldn't want Rose off with the Doctor, Danny doesn't want Clara off with the Doctor either, and he's constantly disappointed that, again, they're going to have a date or just a regular day in the school, and she's always off with him.
Yeah, true. Well, like, as a mere mortal, he can't really compete with the Doctor.
No.
Yeah, which I guess is the problem underlining this entire argument. Anyway, listen.
Yeah,
thumbs up.
Definitely.
Thumbs up it is. All right, next up, Time Heist. Hang on.
Oh, crumbs. We are 45 minutes into this 10-minute bonus episode.
This may need to be a double feature.
Yeah, we have ladies who like us.
Yes, we have ladies who like us waiting for us. So we're gonna speed through to include the next one, and then we're probably going to break and do this as a two-parter.
Okay. Well, I mean, you described earlier the next one, Time Heist, as it's Time Heist. So, would you care to elaborate on that?
Okay, so I think Time Heist, from just about a minute into the episode, proves that it's going to be super witty, not super witty, but super clever and super fun.
Slick, yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's Ocean's 11, but it's... This is actually one that you and I watched together, I think. We watched this at your place.
Yes, it was. True.
Time Heist, I mean, it's a heist movie wrapped in the weirdest, wibbliest, wobbliest elements of Doctor Who. It's lovely. And it's from that, like, 1 minute into the episode where the Doctor picks up the phone and goes, like, what could possibly go wrong by me answering the phone? And then cut to him in the exact same pose holding a memory slug, whatever it's called, the amnesia slug thing, just screaming. Hilarious.
Yeah. It's a box within a box, or an enigma wrapped within a mystery or whatever, because Doctor Who, New Who certainly, perhaps Classic Who as well, relies so much on some mysterious force directing the Doctor's movement over time scales that span series and that we don't comprehend until they're suddenly revealed grandly at the very end. And this episode has that in miniature.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. What did you think of the side characters? I mean, it followed the formula of a heist movie where you have, like, oh, this is the safecracker, this is the demolitions expert, this is the good looking one, this is the whatever, like, you have all these stereotypes. It followed that model because you had, like, this is the android, this is the woman who can impersonate people.
Yes, I can't add it into that description.
Okay.
You put it very well.
Okay, what did you think of the weird minotaur kind of creature who was wandering around flattening people's heads? I was not a fan.
Sorry.
So there was this dude who had, like, I want to say it's... Oh, I saw this episode twice and I still can't remember it properly, but there's, like, this thing that looks kind of like a minotaur, and it has horns, and the horns transmit some sort of weird pressure beam onto someone's skull. Anyone who tries to steal from the bank, basically. And it then...
Yes.
The people turn around and it ends up, like, revealing that, holy fuck, it sucked out their brains or something, or it, like, compressed their cranium.
Yeah, their heads have become punctured footballs, is what they
are. Yeah, exactly. Exactly what they look like. But then also, weirdly, they're still alive. But then, towards the end, it turns out, actually, let's have this minotaur couple go to a planet and dance around in a field.
Yes! Oh, dear. That wasn't me coming, by the way. That was a realization.
Really? Why is there a puddle there?
Tense disappointments. That was when my brain got sucked out.
Okay.
Yum. I could just do this episode by myself. I can be Ponkin' as well. Yeah. Okay. I'll give it a thumbs down then.
Really? Holy shit, man. This is the first time that we're properly, like, disagreeing. I'm absolutely giving this a thumbs up. I think this is a very clever episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think the acting is good. As at least, okay, the Doctor I feel is really good in it. Clara I feel is really good in it. The overall plot of it, I mean, it's stolen from every single heist movie ever, but it's really good. The side characters are okay in terms of acting. I don't really give a shit about them. They were a little bit too good looking for my taste. Like, basically, they follow the model of a lady ladies and gentlemen, okay, here's an insight into our lives. We were in the company of ladies, and for some reason we were watching Backstreet Boys videos, and there was a debate over who is the best looking Backstreet Boy. That ended up with us pointing at the person who was the potentially at least one of the best looking Backstreet Boys as being almost too good looking to have talent. And the same thing I feel applies to the side characters here. Like, they pick people who looked the part, like who really looked hot and cool and blah blah blah, whatever, blah. Like, I don't give a shit. They're people who should be on a dance floor. They shouldn't be acting.
Mm-hmm.
That's my problem with them. But overall, it was a cool episode.
Yeah, I'm not saying it was worthless, but I've been giving a lot of thumbs up, and I do remember feelings of ambivalence about this series.
Yeah.
And so I am retrospectively imposing a thumbs down on this to suit fair the narrative enough arc of my brain distorting reality.
Okay, fair enough.
Because the next episode is The Caretaker.
Goddamn right it is, and it's going to be the last one that we review in this episode. Stay tuned for part two of our Capaldi Series 8 double feature.
Does this mean I have to come back again next week?
Only if you want to, Pete. I mean, it'd be great. I mean, you're here. If we should interview you, should we, Drew?
Well, I mean, it'd be a missed opportunity.
It really would.
That would be embarrassing, wouldn't it? If Who Back When just didn't interview Peter Capaldi when he rocks up.
Anyway, yeah. Well, Pete, we'll get to you in the next episode. Let's talk about The Caretaker. What did you think of The Caretaker?
I thought it was... I mean, I set this up as if I was going to give it the biggest double thumbs up ever, and then I remembered the robot.
Yeah, the robot is so shit.
Yeah.
So, okay, the robot is totally shit, and there is one special effect in this, which I shit you not, okay, you know what? If people who worked on the special effects of this episode are tuning in to Who Back When...
Or if Peter knows them and can get them to listen...
Yeah, please do, Pete. I swear to God, that special effect was stolen straight off a template from videocorepilot.net. And here's the thing, that same special effect appears in which film, Druid? I'll give you a hint. I'll fucking point at it. It appears in Star Trek Swing Shift.
Holy moly.
Yes. The energy wibbly wobbly in Sector Z Alpha in Star Trek Swing Shift.
Yeah.
Used in the exact same template. I did no work. I just stole a template. The effect of the robot spider soldier thingy in The Caretaker suddenly appearing from a different dimension or a different time. I can't remember. Like, either way, like it dematerializes, right? And then it appears again mm-hmm. in this circular thing. Compare that to the, I think it's called energy sphere or something tutorial on videocorepilot.net. I swear to God, they just nicked a template from there.
So what's left of Caretaker?
Special effects aside, and really, really shit robot spider soldier aside,
mm-hmm.
this is the best the Doctor's ever been, in my view.
Yeah, it's certainly the most fun.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Well, since Robot of Sherwood, I suppose.
Mm. Yeah, okay.
Every three episodes, the Doctor is allowed to be fun. But most of the time, he's a cynical bastard.
That's true.
But yeah. He has the capacity to be fun, don't forget.
So how do you feel about... I feel like there are two dynamics, like character dynamics, that are important in this episode. One is between the Doctor and Pink, because mm-hmm. the Pink is constantly just wondering what the shit is going on between Clara and the Caretaker, right? Which is hilarious. And then there's between the Doctor and just the random little girl who then ends up being the co-star in the next episode.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, oh, ladies and gentlemen, this is like, you know, heads up, you absolutely have to listen to the next episode because we're going to talk about this little girl. I am so pissed off that just some random chick gets to go into the TARDIS and go to the moon. God damn it! She hasn't deserved it! Okay, we're not there yet. Anyway. Oh, pisses me off. Okay, anyway, how do you feel about these dynamics?
I see these questions coming and I'm just a rabbit in the headlights. Can you break down for me...
Pink.
This characterization... I can't think of what to add that we haven't already said about Pink. Sorry, it was like 11 months ago.
Yeah, okay, fair really enough, I suppose.
You know, without being able to remember a single whit of dialogue...
So in this episode, there's that joke of Clara telling the Doctor, I really like this guy, and the Doctor thinking, this guy is the geeky dude whom he saw her with? And then...
What, the Matt Smith clone? Was that...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, oh, obviously he wears a bow tie. Obviously you like him. I didn't have so flattered. And then after a while of the Doctor going, I totally... Like, you have my blessing. Completely. I mean, you know, rub my dick for good luck. And then after a while, all of a sudden, it's revealed that it's P.E., which is what he calls Pink throughout almost the entire rest of the series. Like, hey, P.E.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious. Okay, what are your thoughts on that? What's your take on that? To me, it's just fun.
Yeah, yeah. It's very enjoyable. It's light-hearted. As much as the Doctor strives to be darker with each succeeding series, because that is what a lot of people want, and they want to go to that place.
That's where cinema is heading and where film and TV is heading.
Yeah, basically all media are plunging us into an ever-darkening abyss. But it is nice to, you know, see a bit of range in what Capaldi does. And Peter, if you get tired of my constantly complimenting you, just tell me to stop. But he's not going to tell me to stop. He was an established actor, more than Matt Smith was, definitely. More than David Tennant was, just because he's had a much longer career. And so, with Capaldi, there
and was... And also, you could argue he's a better actor.
Well, yeah, and there was the expectation that he could bring much more depth and complexity and range to the Doctor. Mm. And so in this episode, it's good to see him going to this other extreme.
How does that make you feel about Pink? I mean, I realise this is the Capaldi bonus episode, but, like, the Doctor treating Pink like he's just some total schlemiel, how does that make you feel about Pink? Does that make you, as part of the audience, relate more to Pink? Think him more adorable, whatever? Or does it make you just resent him?
It's complicated because in Doctor Who, no interaction can ever be taken on its own at face value. Because you know that in Doctor Who, it's all leading somewhere.
Yeah.
And there is deeper significance and resonance to be found in potentially every line the writers decide upon.
Sure.
And so if the Doctor hates Pink in this way, you almost suspend judgment, because you know that one way or another it's going to be borne out by stuff you find out later on, or some new twist or conclusion.
Okay, yeah, so, fair enough.
Yeah,
that's a lovely way of describing Doctor Who, by
that's
way.
My way of wriggling out of the answer.
Well wriggled. Overall, what are you giving this? Are you giving The Caretaker a thumbs up, a thumbs down, wobbly one?
I'll give it a thumbs up on the diagonal. So, you know, 45 degrees off true north.
Oh, interesting. And you're taking that down from a full thumbs up because of what? Because of the spider robot?
Yes.
Okay.
Purely.
Spider Robot is kind of shit. I mean, I'm not going to assign a numerical value to this rating, but yes, I suppose this is not a perfectly perpendicular, straight up thumbs up. This is a slightly diagonal one, but it's only ever so slightly. I love this episode. It's awesome.
Cool. What better way to bow out on part one?
Holy crap, man! Holy crap! We've probably missed so many references to Missy and to the Paradise and whatever, blah, 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 blah. Ugh.
But we have detained you long enough.
Yes, we have. And oh my God, stay tuned for episode 2, or for part 2 of this double feature. We are going to talk about the second half of series 8. It's going to blow your mind holes! Holy crap! And Peter Capaldi is going to be here still. Peter, shit, we haven't even spoken to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes.
A man of few words.
Yes.
Thanks, Peter.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you following Drew? You should. The Droodmeister, the Droodhammer, the Drood.
The Drew Back When, as I am on Twitter.
Yes, follow him on Twitter. He is at Drew Back When.
I live to give.
Awesome, awesome Twitter handle. I'm so jealous. I wish my name rhymed with who. Okay, and if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can. I am at Ponken. Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponken.
Thanks, JD!
Catch us in the next part of this bonus episode. Our next New Who review is probably going to be the Satan Pit. After that, oh, actually, let's say this on the air as well. I'm going to pop this on Facebook, but please, for the love of God, after that, we are reviewing Love and Monsters. It is the shittest episode ever created of any show, let alone of Doctor Who. Please send in your minis. Tell us how to improve it. Tell us what made it crap. Tell us why you hate and or love it. We want to hear it. Our next classic review is going to be The Underwater Menace. And our next audio Who review is still going to be We're in Dawn. And yes, in brackets, I still hate the shit out of it. Thank you so much for listening. Catch you in the next one. Rock on and ciao.
See ya.
Amateurs.
Thanks, Pete. You've been a treat.
Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/WhoBackWhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account, no lie, so give us a follow. You guessed it, that's @WhoBackWhen, all in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your earballs in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Ciao.
Who Back When.